Thank you very, very much, Doc. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's a special privilege to be here for this 40th anniversary. I'd like to introduce my wife to you. We've been married, we'll be a year next 1st of July. We're both widowers, and mutual friends introduced us, and we got acquainted. Del Stenkastander, this is Del, my wife. Stand up there. Now, I need to tell you that during our courtship, I tried to explain to her that I was retarded. And she thought I said I was retired. Now that we've been married a while, she's found out that I, in fact, am retarded, but I'm not retired. She's trying to move me over more to the retired side, but I'm not getting there very fast. I want to first thank a number of people that helped me put together the information for this event. Roy Wallace and Don Trimmer, Willie Altenberg, all. Am I getting too close to this sometimes? And the NAAB staff, and particularly Doug Frank, who really did more work than anybody on making all this thing happen, but did a remarkable job in doing that. So I'm going to have a couple of parts of this. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you, and I'll tell you what I told you. So there's the first part is kind of, I guess, in a way, my story of how all this came about as I saw what was happening then. And then as we got further along in it, a lot of other information came in, so we were able to put that together in a PowerPoint presentation. So I will work through that. So there will be a little repetition, but you'll be better informed for the quiz that we'll have at the end of the presentation, because you'll hear most of this thing twice. Well, I'm supposed to be retired. I do run my own herd of Simmentals, as Doug mentioned, and try to keep in touch with the industry. But this opportunity to prepare for this event was a wonderful opportunity to revisit people and events of a long time ago, and for me, a grand career in the livestock improvement. If you haven't read Courageous Cattlemen in recent times, Bob DeBacher's wonderful book, I would recommend you do so. I did that in preparation for this to help me. I'm not. I just need to be closer to it? Or okay. I did review that book because it helped me remember a lot of people. I knew everybody in it almost, but I learned a lot of new things about many of those people. So I'd say it's a fun book to review and read if you're at least anyway interested in the cattle industry. But I learned a lot of new things about many of those people as I reread that. Jay Lush and Ray Woodward and Martin Jorgensen, Trey Carpenter, all these names you're going to know, Buddy Cobb, Frank Baker, Richard Willem, H.H. Stoniker, Jim Brinks, George Chiga, Don Vanneman, Sally Forbes, Roy Beebe, Tom Lasseter, Lou Chestnut, Harry Ferguson, Dave Nichols, Roy Wallace, and Bob DeBacher were among the people that I worked closely with. And several of these people were students with me with Dr. Lush at Iowa State, and I had the privilege of presenting to them the ABS Animal Breeding and Genetics Award at the Animal Science Annual Meetings. So it's a special privilege to think back of all those people. My direct involvement with AI began in 1962 when I was selected by ABS to implement and design and implement their Holstein progeny testing program. During that time, I developed and implemented what we call the ABS Estimated Daughter Superiority System for evaluating dairy bulls in 1963. In 1965, that was adopted by the USDA. They gave it a new name and called it Predict the Difference, but it's exactly the same formula. That same system is still in place and used around the world in the dairy cattle breeding field and in the beef cattle breeding field. But in more recent years, with the development of much more powerful computers and faster computers, and with the application of great scientific minds to improve the mathematical adaptation to the specific traits of economic interest, it's been improved. The animal model, or the reduced animal model, is the modern, most modern version of that system. Dr. Ray Woodward and I became acquainted when I joined ABS. He had already been there about 3 years in developing the first beef progeny testing program. We obviously had many mutual interests as geneticists. In 1965, during a time of reorganization at ABS, when I was basically put in charge of the company, including the marketing operation and the genetic programs, including beef cattle, Ray became my mentor, and I became his champion. ABS was approaching 100,000 units of semen sold each year, beef at that time, but we're not able to get over that amount. I decided we were either going to get serious about beef AI or we were going to get out, and I announced that. I really had no intention of getting out, but I wanted to be sure that I got the attention of a very good staff, but who were mostly focused on the dairy industry. I recognized that Ray Woodward had been fighting a valiant but a lonely battle up to that time, and I was determined to get him some help. As most of you know, Ray Woodward had been a longtime proponent of performance testing, and that him coming to ABS signaled his realization that beef AI, done right, would be a perfect complement to performance testing. While some of our beef was going into dairy cows, most of the time beef breeding was to a group of performance-oriented commercial producers using in the upper Midwest using several beef breeds, British beef breeds, and who were followers of Ray's philosophy. It was obvious to me at that time that three things needed to be done for the expansion of beef AI and to make it besides a real commitment from a dairy marketing team. We had to get them switched over, and these three things had to be done. Someone had to get the cows bred. Our traditional AI technicians were a long way from the beef cows. So we began developing the ABS field AI training program at locations all over the country, wherever we could congregate enough cattlemen to run our school. By the time I retired in 1991, we had trained over 125,000 people in dairymen and cattlemen in these schools. Secondly, we needed longer holding time liquid nitrogen reefers that could be leased to dairymen, could be leased to ranchers along with the semen needed for their breeding season without the need to be refilled during that time with nitrogen, and could be returned at the end of the breeding season with the semen intact and nitrogen remaining in the tank. The Lindy Company got the job done first, and I'm still using one of those tanks and my own herd, which is nearly 35 years old now. We've devised as many as 4,000 of those tanks every spring at the beginning of the beef breeding season, as it was in those days anyway. And then they would be used throughout the season and come back in. Then we would resell them when they came back as field tested. So in those early days, they didn't always hold, there was an advantage where they were field tested. And so we would sell them to dairymen the rest of the year. That was a way of lowering my inventory and cost and providing income. Thirdly, a system for synchronization to minimize the labor required or even to make it possible to implement a beef AI program in a real ranching operation. That was a tough one to break, and it's gone through many systems, but today probably 90% of beef AI is done using these protocols. As these things were beginning to happen at ABS, in the mid to late 60s, some tough battles were happening elsewhere with PRI and with BIF. I was aware of this through Ray Woodward and others on our staff, but I had my hands full with similar battles going on in the dairy field. That is, who was going to control the AI industry? The AI companies or the dairy breed registries? I was elected to the NAB board, became its president, and led the battle which we won on this critical issue. It was also during this time that I brought in a beef registry executive, Bill Durfee, from AICA, to become the NAB executive secretary and give new leadership to the organization. Again, Ray Woodward was my primary contact in enticing Durfee to join us. I think this also helped the beef industry know that we were serious about beef AI. Back at ABS, with the AI training schools rolling, the longer holding time reefers on the way, and a start on industrial synchronization, our beef AI program began to take off and really laid the groundwork for the exciting 10 years to follow. With the interest in locating new genetic material to produce beef of less fat, rather than undoing 200 years of selection for more fat as we had done in the British breeds to fit the market of the past, the recognition that Charolais in this country did have less fat led to going back to France to get more Charolais genetics to augment that had gotten in the United States via Mexico and from upgrading several decades before. Senator Harry Hayes of Canada, a real mover and shaker, led the way in making a route available through Canada in 1965, with a number of Charolais and one Simmental or Pea Rouge coming in that first year. ABS had long had a presence in Canada, so we had an inside track in securing many of these bulls as they came to Canada in the years following, with over 20 breeds brought in. Ray and I made numerous trips together in Europe in selecting the specific bulls to bring in. We established a stud site at Rag Creek near Calgary, which became a mecca for these new breeds and where we produced millions of units of semen to export to the United States and around the world. As I said earlier, we had already set the table with our beef preparation and training, distribution, and management, and we had this great network of performance-oriented people excited about AI. That led to explosive growth in beef AI. We sold enough beef semen, to breed over 1 million cows in 1973 and 1.2 million cows in 1974. Before the recession hit the whole country, and particularly the beef industry. It was a heady time. As some of you may remember, the British Beef Registry Associations, except for Red Angus, had opposed allowing registration of AI offspring, except on a very restricted basis, through the 60s. With the explosion of popularity of the exotic breeds, which adopted open AI policies, and many commercial breeders using beef AI, some enlightened Angus breeders in particular, and Martin Jorgensen specifically, sitting right over here. Stand up there, Martin. Made a real difference in this industry. You may well remember he's one of your founders, a past president, and recipient of the Seed Stock Breeder Award. He began challenging that breed policy. Ray Woodard kept me informed on these developments, and we were quietly behind. Not better. Should I put the other one on? Okay. And we were quietly behind the scene giving full support to this very courageous gentleman. A wonderful contribution to the industry, Martin. And I happen to have right up here somewhere a copy that he provided me that a fellow named Ernie Sellers wrote in 1969, which was addressed to the Angus Board of Directors, which outlined the case, and not long after they read that case, they realized they were in deep trouble if they didn't change things fast. And if any of you'd like to read it, it's fascinating reading. So that's the copies of it appear that you'd find very interesting if you're interested in part of history. In 1972, the Angus Association acknowledged the impossible legal position the board was in and changed their policy. To their credit, the Angus breeders in this country jumped on this new opportunity and a new tool with both feet, recognized the potential of large databases with widespread use of AI, soon had a national size summary with help from my friend Richard Willem, who's seated right down here, and have never looked back. As an aside, it should be noted that the American Simmental Association had the first national size summary a year before that. And as a Seminole breeder, I sometimes wonder why I just didn't leave those Angus breeders out back in the dark ages. But I had to wear my other hat as an ABS president, and we couldn't walk away from the potential in a breed as great as the Angus breed was. In 1968, we developed and introduced the ABS Genetic Mating Service, which combined a linear evaluation system for functional dairy conformation with each cow with a computer decision process utilizing all possible mating sires to determine the best possible mating for that cow. Millions of commercial dairy cows around the world have now been mated using this system that combined the wisdom of the dairyman with the power of the computer. This was an industry first. I had intended to introduce a similar system in our beef breeding program, but the recession and many other problems interfered with that plan, including my resignation from ABS in 1982. But Peter Grace, the chairman of Grace, would not accept my resignation. Instead, he changed the whole management system we reported to within the Grace Company, gave me a free hand to rebuild the ABS that had almost been destroyed in the previous 7 years. There was much to be done, but we got it done, including the first clones in the animal world with the creation of Fusion and Copy, long before Dolly the Sheep was ever heard of, and of Gene the Bull, who was conceived before Dolly the Sheep, but because of the longer gestation period for cattle was born just after Dolly. Anyway, we finally introduced the ABS genetic type summary to the beef industry in 1988, and it has added immensely to the effectiveness of the beef cattle industry. The recession in 1974 really put a crimp in most businesses and certainly in agriculture. The beef business took a real beating, as the previous years had been so great that cattle numbers had continued increasing in defiance of the typical 10 or 11 year cattle cycle. So the supply of beef far exceeded demand. Thus, President Nixon's freeze on beef prices, some of you old timers may remember some of that, and other commodities acerbated the crunch on beef producers' income. Instead of a normal product cycle curve, the beef AI business fall was precipitous. As producers got out of the business or hunkered down and minimized all outgo just to survive, the supply of top proven beef bulls from our long-term plugin testing programs greatly exceeded the demand, and many outstanding bulls were either sent to market or sold at a great discount for natural breeding services as all segments of the industry contracted to weather the storm. The bloom was off the exotics, and many of the newly introduced breeds never got a chance to be adequately tested on our beef production systems. Those that were better established had a database and had a genetic base and genetic evaluation systems in place were able to survive if they had real merit. But it was a real testing time, and many fell by the wayside. The Angus breed, which really got their act together after the legal case was resolved, began to make significant genetic progress using AI and saw their new sire evaluation system. As the industry began to recover, they were in the best position to take advantage of the new growth opportunities and have rightfully claimed their spot at the top of most AI breeding programs. That's tough for a Simmental breeder to say, but as synthetics or composites have been developed and the power of hybrid vigor has been more widely understood in commercial beef production, several other breeds have regained their footing and are finding major niche positions in crossbreeding programs for beef production. Some breeds or breeders tried to be all things to all genetic needs in the industry, but I sense that most of them now recognize the specific strengths and or weaknesses of their breed and are seeking to find their best fit in the breeding program. Now I'm going to switch over to this PowerPoint thing here, if I can make all this work. If I get in trouble, Renee is going to come help me here. So we're going to do kind of a timeline. You can see along the bottom of the screen there. I can't really see the screen, but a timeline across here. So we sort of have 10-year periods along here. So in 1946, NAAB was established. That's the National Association of Animal Breeders, our host tonight, and the one that helps pull together the different segments of the AI industry. Most of the emphasis was on dairy, and this was a shot from Tri-State, now accelerated, at their site in Westby, Wisconsin. And I think it's Nickman is also, but you see beef began to come in, but they were at the tail end there. And the Angus bull was pretty small back in those days. But this was about in the before 1960. 1951, the first beef bulls came into the ABS lineup, and on the right side you'll see the in Tri-State's catalog, the last bull on the right there is they had an Aberdeen Angus. So both of us got into the beef business. Although I think it's fair enough to say most of that semen was brought in to breed dairy cows for calving ease, or to breed dairy heifers for calving ease. But it got us into the business. And in the beginning, before 1960, we'd recognize there was little individual performance data, no progeny testing, no progeny performance data, No synchronization options. We relied on technicians. The choice of Angus or Hereford, maybe a Shorthorn. And there was one price and no individual bull choice. 1960s, we began to get more interest in and more breeds. So this, you'll begin to see on the right hand over in the upper right corner, I'm showing here then the different companies that were involved, and we'll get more of them as we go along here, but so you'll see who was working in the beef ad business at that time. This is from Roy Wallace, and the point of this one is to show how little data we really had. We thought we were doing pretty well, but you'll notice, you could really see, but on the right side, you'll see that one bull has 12 offspring, and the other bull has 6 offspring. And that was about as good as anybody did back in those days. There wasn't much data to work with. 1961, ABS initiated their large-scale pudgeon testing program. The one that Ray Woodward came in to develop in 59, but it got off in the field and began to develop that. And Ray was one of the real heroes of this industry. This is one of the first results of that program, the Inbar bull. I'm sure Martin remembers that bull well. And it was a structured pudgeon test. Had versus 15 different sires, and they were tested for birth weight, weaning weight, feedlot gain, quality grade, ribeye area, fat cover. Pretty advanced for that time. In the mid-60s, the beginning of the exotic era, the first Charolais bulls, Bramard and Desnay, for us, came in from France, and Bismarck was our first Simmental bull from Switzerland, but I didn't have a picture of Parisian, but he was the first Simmental bull that came in. And those bulls started to come in, changed that industry, changed the whole industry. Also in the 60s, the first progesterone-based synchronization program was introduced, but it was called ReproMix, and without prostaglandins and with very little understanding of the follicular developments, these systems yielded subpar results, so they didn't have much impact. We also started the AI schools so that we could train the ranchers as well as the dairymen to breed their own cows and open up a vast new market. In 1967, BIF was formed as a follow-up to the PRI. And then this shows the beef AI done through the 60s. Now, there'll be a different basis as we go to the next series of slides after a while. So at that time, NAAB kept the record based on first service breedings. Later on, it's on units of semen sold. So it's not too much difference because in beef, most cows, you only got one shot at them. So it might have been a 1.1 or 1.2 factor where that would be different, but still comparative. I'm sorry. 1970s, the exotics really began to come in. And then if you'll notice on the right-hand column, it shows the breed makeup. I got this from the NAB people, that at that point, 30% of the NAB sales were Angus, 23% Simmental, 8% Old Hereford, 5% Maynard Jew, and 5% Charolais. We'll see a series of these slides as we go along here, so you'll want to keep track of that. In the 1970s, we had the first 16-week holding times. I think we're up to maybe 34-week holding time now, which makes a huge difference in where we can reach and how we can get the product to the customers. 1971, the first Simmental sire summary came out. Also in 71, the first progeny tested Simmental ever to sell at public auction sold in Lethbridge, Canada, and I was lucky enough to land that bull. There's long stories about that, but I won't take time to tell you about it now. Also, as I mentioned earlier, the open AI policy adopted by the Angus Association began to really make a change. So it allows for the development and propagation of highly proven sires, along with improved computer technology. It opens AI, enables today's genetic evaluation systems. It created a huge database, the kind of thing that Richard Wilhelm could work with, and he had it available. And then we look over on the right-hand column, and it's plenty small. I don't know whether you can read it up there, but I just wanted to mention these were the top bulls from registration for AI at that time. And number 2 and number 6 were both Martin Jorgensen's bulls. So you can see he was a pretty dominant figure in what was going on in performance Angus at that time. That gave him some leverage when he went to battle with the Angus Association. Maybe it wasn't enough leverage, but as I recall, they gave you a pretty bad time for a while. Is that right, Martin? Yeah. I think you sold great bulls for a couple of years, as I recall, when they refused to work with you on that, but something like that. But anyway, 1973, we published our first in-house EPDs on our own bulls, are giving 205-day weight, feedlot every day to gain final weight and cutability. And then when the data really started rolling in, I know you can't read these figures up here, but the bull on the left is Decor. and he had almost 7,500 offspring on the 205-day weaning weight. The others had not as much, but you could see that the data was really began to roll in from these breeds. And there were lots of meetings all over the country with the exotic thing was an unbelievable period of time, and everybody was excited about it. And I think this was up in Canada when we had this at one time. 1974, that first Angus Sauer evaluation that Dick Willem helped put together was published. And also then in the mid-70s, 1975, I believe, CSS, which is Certified Semen Services, which was a part of NAB, but we broadened it so that it could include those who were not necessarily members but wanted to have advantage of the system we had for proving that the operation was done right, the semen was done under proper testing procedures, the bulls were tested for disease, et cetera. So it's become a very important part of the industry. Then this shows through the 1970s. So as I say this, the red is on a different basis. That's units of semen sold, and the first one was cow's bread. But you can see, and the bottom years are just slightly off. You got to move the year off to the right a little bit, so that actually 1974 is the highest mark there. And that's when that was the peak of things before the crunch really began to hit. And you can see it was fun for a while, and then it was pretty tough for a while. This is the 80s. I think that's Traveler on the upper left-hand corner. And I don't know other bulls or other studs. I can't remember. And you'll see here on the lower right corner, 1985 breed makeup from NAEB. 39% Angus, 18% Simmental, 16% Pulled Hereford, and 3% Limousine. In 1980, the introduction of prostaglandins was first made available and began to really give us some tools that we'd been looking for a long, long time. 1983, the introduction of Synchromate B, which was a lot of work. It worked for a little while, but I think we moved on. I don't believe that's even on the market anymore. And then another big move was the development of dry shippers so that you could ship semen much more easily anywhere around the country on a bus or whatever. You didn't have to worry about them tipping over and spilling nitrogen out and then semen not be good. It just was a remarkable development that made it possible to get semen anywhere, any place. In the late 1980s, then we had the combination of the MGA, which kind of came back on the scene, and could be used with prostaglandin. So the combination of those two products provided a cheap and a reliable means of heifer synchronization. This combined with those reliable birth weight EPDs and pushback against the bigger birth weights that we had for some time in the 70s and 80s brought enormous growth to heifer AI. You'll see that in a chart a little bit later here. And we began to see, again, on the upper top and down the side there, you'll again see some of the studs that were more involved during that period of time in AI, beef AI. Then this shows through the 80s. Now, as I said, we kind of overwhelmed this cattle cycle there in the early 70s. We stretched that cycle out to about a 15-year cycle or something. But then you see it begins to function again as you come down in the late 80s. That was not so much that beef AI wasn't working. It just the cattle cycle was beginning to take its effect. You'll see that later on. In 1990s, a little different look at the kind of bulls were showing up there then. You look at the right column, you'll see that the Angus have moved up to 60%. Simmental 10, Pulled Hereford 8, Red Angus 5. This was a program that Roy Wallace developed and one of the really early systems that put together a workable system of using GnRH and prostaglandin. I think you're still using it, Roy, is that right? And it's worked very effectively for them. And it pioneered many new developments of systems similar to that. Late 90s, 1998, we had the first ultrasound genetic information evaluation. And so you can see on this particular bull, there's only 3 herds and 4 progeny on the left side, but on the right side, there's 60 herds and 212 progeny on ultrasound versus the carcass. So we were able to get a lot more data, and with that kind of volume, you can get much higher accuracy. In 1999, the first beef industry selection indexes were introduced, and that's, I think, used almost with all breeds now and all studs. Now, an update again here on the beef volume. We got a little higher there in the mid-90s, and then the cattle cycle started kind of having its effect again there, but it was solid and steady. Then you can see where the Angus keep on rolling. I don't know whether the rest of us are going to survive all this. I think we may have to put a moratorium on Angus for 2 or 3 years and let us catch up. But you see they're up to 76% now. Seminole 7, Red Angus 6, Polk Hereford 3. Then the data explosion really came in. So you'll see here, and you just look at the red there, you'll see, because you can't read the small print, but this particular bull had 36,000-plus winning records, nearly 9,000 daughters, 18,000 ultrasound records on this bull. With that kind of information, you could really begin to make some accurate progress. In 2003, the cedars were introduced, which then could be added to this arsenal of tools we had to synchronize heat on these cattle. And so, we can't read this, I know, but this shows just a number of the different systems that have been widely published by different organizations, so you can kind of pick from those that work for you and make them work. Also, in the 2000, we've had a change from a commodity beef system to a value-driven system that's, we think, positively influencing AI usage. It's tremendous success with branded programs like Certified Angus Beef, and it's estimated that 40% of the cattle today are sold on the grid. Today, we have highly proven sires for 20-plus traits. We have effective time synchronization systems for heifers and for cows. We have overnight shipping, and we have sex semen. Now, this brings you up to date to, again, you've got to move that margin on the bottom over just 1 year so it comes out just right, but you see the upswing is showing pretty steady there, where we're not back where we were in the 73 and 74, but we're on a much more solid basis, and it's showing a good increase there. The NIST takes into account the semen sold specifically by the AI companies domestically, in the purple bar. The white, then, is the semen exported, and then the green is the custom-collected semen produced by NAB and CSS members. And you can see that all are growing, but the custom collection is clearly growing very rapidly. This shows the percent of Angus calves resulting from AI, and you can see it started back there below 10% and gradually moving on up, and now it's almost 50%. Almost 50% of registered Angus are from AI. Then this is an attempt to bring some of the information in a previous chart to show the percent of beef females that are bred AI. And so, Doug, you changed just a whole lot since I last saw it. Anyway, it's still too low, but let's look at the trend. It's clearly increasing at a very rapid rate, and I think it's going to continue to do that because we've got the system in place. Okay. Now, I've not been to Brazil or Argentina for the last 20 years, but I understand the beef industry there has gone way past us in percent of beef cows bred AI in commercial herds, using much of the same technology we developed here. I think we'd better take a lesson from that and do a better job of practicing what we've been preaching. But we taught them how to do that, but they're showing us how to implement it better than we've been able to do here. Like in the dairy business, the cows never stay milked, and you have to do it again every day. We have developed magnificent tools and management systems for beef AI in commercial production, but we have to keep moving ahead as markets and conditions change. We have to keep our genetic tools sharpened and aimed in the right direction. I remember well, Dick and Bob, one of the things Dr. Lush taught us when we first started learning about all this, about correlations and regressions, he said, any damn fool can see that two things are related. The key thing is to put the arrow on the right end of that line. Well, that's what I'm referring to here. Let's be sure we remember what is the cause and what's the effect when we're trying to bring about a change in the animal we're working with. Yesterday's solutions are soon out of date. One final note regarding one of our heroes. It was a great privilege for me to play a role in the nomination of Dr. Ray Woodward, to have his name and portrait hung in the Saddle and Sirloin Club in Louisville as among the leaders of the livestock industry about 15 years ago. His presence certainly added to the prestige of that gallery. Now back to the stories exemplified in Courageous Cattlemen. As I reread those stories, I gained a new appreciation for those individuals, many of you here, who reflected the very best of human attributes. Many were first and second generation pioneers who were clear and courageous thinkers who battled formidable circumstances or people in bringing about what we now call performance testing. They were strongly committed to doing what was best for the industry without concern for personal gain. That was the heritage of Beef Improvement Federation. They and you are to be commended for courage, integrity, dedication, and foresight in making BIF a real cornerstone of the beef industry. I tip my hat to you and to them, and I'm proud to say I was a friend to many of them and to many of you. Thank you very much.